Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here until 5 o'clock. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk about the most popular candies from state to state throughout the country. So, you know, you can prepare for Halloween throughout the nation. We got Wood Esmeralda to buy that coming up, and it's Triple Play Thursday. You want to get those requests in, do it now at 312-981-7200. All right. I want to welcome back to the show for his biweekly visit. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And his name is Dan Feinberg, and he joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan.
How are you doing, Nick?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing well. I feel like it's been a while since we've talked, since we missed a week.
We did, yeah. I was on vacation for a week, but I'm back, and now we'll get back into the groove of things.
Fantastic. I hope you spent the entire time catching up on TV.
I watched a lot of TV. I did. I watched a lot of TV. I didn't do much of anything else but watch TV and horror films because it's October. So, but I understand that you were at the baseball game on Tuesday night.
I was indeed, which was the good game from a Los Angelino perspective.
Well, all right.
The game on Wednesday night, which was a good game from your local perspective.
Yes, it was. Now, where were you sitting? Were you sitting anywhere near Larry King?
I keep telling people that if I had a bag of peanuts, I could have thrown the bag of peanuts and hit Larry King. but I was not actually next to him. I was right next to Dennis Haysbert, he did not narrate the entire game. He did not make any major league jokes. It was really kind of disappointing. I think he was saving his voice because he didn't want to, you know, yell too loud.
Yeah, he didn't make a reference to Joe Boo at all.
Not at all. Or certainly not that I heard. And no one came running up to him to ask for any of those references.
Right. So they just come up and go, Joe Boo needs a refill.
He was just being a guy at the Dodgers game.
Oh, that's cool.
So good for him, I guess.
Yeah. It's interesting, you know, when the stars come out. I mean, we get, you know, at Wrigley, we get, you know, we get John Cusack, we get Bill Murray, we get Eddie Vedder, and Chris Chelios. And then you guys are like, right. I have to look at Larry King for 3 hours a night now, and Mary Hart.
Right there.
Yeah.
he is right there. Let's see. I could have thrown a bag of peanuts and hit Magic Johnson. Why would I want to do that? Certainly could have thrown a bag of peanuts and hit Tommy Lasorda. But again, why would someone want to do something awful like that? Rebel Wilson was fairly nearby. There was a lot of star power out last night at Dodger Stadium, and I assume on Wednesday as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got one more tonight in LA, and then it comes back to Wrigley. So it's gonna be fun. There were so many after Tuesday night's game, Dan. I know that you were thrilled. A lot of the Cub fans were on the ledge because it's happened too much here in this city. They've broken our hearts too many times. I had to talk a whole bunch of people off the ledge. I'm like, it's okay. If they win tomorrow night, it's an even game, and it's the best of three, and we get the home field advantage. You got it?
Well, Kershaw's pitching one of those games, so that gives the Dodgers a little advantage. But, yeah, the Dodgers wanted to win the Wednesday game. They wanted to have that big lead, and
yeah,
apparently that was not going to happen. And Adrian Gonzalez was totally safe at home plate. And
that's okay. Then they would have only lost by seven. Then Dan,
hey, when it's a nothing game
right.
And the umps job you like that, throws momentum out the window, and I cannot watch that replay more times and be more confident that he was totally safe. That was the entire difference in the game. No,
no, I don't think so. Maybe. All right. Well, let's get into some TV, shall we? Are you going to tonight's game?
Oh no.
Oh, okay.
Trust me, it was a strange anomaly. I went to this one game,
and I
thank my lucky stars for that. But no, I would not expect to be back at any more postseason games this year. But I will certainly be watching on TV.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, cool. Let's start off. I just have one word for you, and that word is Atlanta. Good God, Dan, that show. Okay, so Tuesday night's episode was fantastic. The club episode, fantastic. With one of the funniest sort of final sight gags in the parking lot of the club, I'm telling you, I almost scream laughed off my couch. It's so great. But I really, really want to talk about last week's episode.
That would be B-A-N.
Oh, my God. What an unbelievable piece of television. Would you agree, Dan?
Oh, for sure. It was a superb piece of television. It was Donald Glover writing and directing. And it was, it was just a piece of such marvelous social commentary and criticism, and also so very funny, and putting so many different comedy shows to shame with what it was doing with such ease. Why does SNL ever need to do another parody commercial after the commercials during that episode? That episode was superb, and it came after another. I mean, really, this is a show that has been on a 5 or 6 episode streak of greatness.
Incredible. I think it's the best thing on TV. But how would you try to describe last week's episode, though, to someone? I mean, again, this is as we've discussed before, this is a very, very, very hard show to describe. But that episode,
you wouldn't know how to do it, because it only somewhat fits in within a sort of continuity of what is or isn't happening on the show. It was sort of half a parody of African-American themed television networks and their programming. It was half a parody of advertisements, but specifically the advertisements that are tailored somewhat condescendingly to the African-American community that air on those networks. It was about gender, sexual fluidity, race. It was just about a bunch of stuff, and it was genuinely hilarious. Yeah. And there have been some episodes this season that have been funny, but you have to look for the laugh.
Yeah.
And this was an episode that was just nonstop, laugh out loud, hilarious for 30 minutes, and just proves that if the show wants to do that, it could do that at any time. It just doesn't feel the need to do that every week.
I got to tell you, the first Dodge commercial got me. The first Dodge commercial, I'm watching it, and I thought it was a commercial. And then, like, 20 seconds into it, I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a second. This isn't real, you know? And of course, obviously, by the time they got to the malt liquor and the Swisher Sweets, it was completely obvious. But I just thought it was just an incredible piece of television, one of the best. And, you know, the week before that, with the dinner scene between the two girls – that opening, like, 8 minutes is unbelievable. It's, like, just incredible. Like, when I wrote on my Facebook page, I was like, remember how everybody went nuts over the first 2 minutes or the first 10 minutes of The Social Network? Well, it's just been rivaled by the first 10 minutes of Atlanta on that episode.
And to me, it's so impressive, the confidence to do something like that, because that was an episode of a show that, in its 7th episode, decided to do an episode focusing on a supporting character who had maybe gotten 10 or 15 minutes of screen time in the season. Taking a look at Ernest's baby mama and giving her a full episode that was as compassionate and humane and just marvelously written as anything else in the series. And they just said, we can do this. This is one of our first 7 episodes, and we're not going to feel as if we're wasting an episode on this. We're just going to do it. Yeah. And I thought the audacity of that episode was tremendous. And then to follow it up with with B-A-N, and then the club episode, which is an entire episode basically in a single location, sort of going back and forth within this one, maybe, I mean, it could be almost in real time. I don't know if it's pretending to be legitimately in real time, but it's maybe 45 minutes in a club or something. Yeah. Just the confidence that this show has so fast is amazing to see. And I agree with you. If you have any questions, at this minute, it's the best show on TV. Yeah. But, you know, that's a fluid title. But in this moment of shows airing on TV, it is the best.
Yeah. If you're not watching Atlanta on FX, you need to. You can catch up on demand. You can catch up at FX now. It's 8 episodes in, and all the accolades in the world belong this. What are we looking at in terms of, are people going to remember this come award time, Dan?
I would guess somewhat. It has done fairly well in the ratings, and I think that helps. And FX has had a little bit more difficulty getting Emmy recognition for some of its comedies. Now, obviously, Louis has been, plenty Emmy toasted. But something like Always Sunny, for example, no Emmy nominations ever, basically.
Right. Well, you know, like it might change with Louis Anderson getting the Emmy.
Exactly. And so that was a big step for them. Is that actually did say, okay, here's a really genuinely offbeat show that we were able to get attention for. I think the fact that Donald Glover is a known commodity helps it.
Yeah.
But the question of sort of what you would recognize it for is a challenge, because the obvious answers are writing and directing, but those are more niche nominations. You know, we would be happy if it got those nominations, but FX wouldn't go, woohoo, we can advertise that and get a bigger audience
right,
for it. But I don't know that you're going to get nominations for the actors, and that's a problem, because I think, for example, Keith Stansfield is so funny.
Yes.
But you would have to find like the right two or three moments that showed how brilliant he was. But it would be a challenge. It wouldn't be as obvious as Louis Anderson. And so I don't know. I would like to believe that people will pay attention to this show because it's a good show. I think, honestly, Better Things has a better chance of getting recognition out of the current run of FX shows, just because I think Pamela Adlon really should be an easy nomination.
Yeah, easy.
For lead actress.
Now, we had a break, Dan, but when we come back, I want to talk about Better Things as well. And I promise we won't just talk about FX shows. I promise. Hang on a second, okay? Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks to talk television. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. We got to take a break here for the news. When we come back, we'll jump more into more TV talk right here on 720 WGN. Good morning. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're back, and we're talking with Dan Feinberg. Right now, we'll be back here at 312-981-7200. Is talking text. Triple Play Thursday coming up. If you want to jump in on that, 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about the most popular candy state by state in the country, so you can prepare for Halloween. We've got a Wood Esmeralda buy that coming up as well, and more. You can check us out on Facebook.com/NickDShow and follow us on Twitter at NickDShow. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter is with us. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we're talking television. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
So before the break, you had mentioned Better Things, which is another great show on FX with Pamela Adlon. And, you know, we haven't spoken since, I guess, three episodes have aired, or two. Is it? No, three.
Last talked after the Lenny Kravitz one, I think.
Right, because so then the period episode came after that, which was phenomenal, I thought. I think every episode has been great. You're saying that this show as well is strong each week?
Oh, I think it's a very funny thing because for a few years, critics have been sort of reliably telling people that they need to watch You're the Worst on FXX, which is low rated and critically adored. And, you know, we've tried to get people to watch, and I don't know if there's been much headway. But at this exact moment, I would tell you without any question, it's the third best show on the FX networks, third best comedy, rather, on the FX networks, airing at this moment, because Atlanta and Better Things are just both so assured out of the box. It's very impressive. The episode that focused on her daughter, Max, I thought was just such a great episode. And again, it's sort of like the episode with the girlfriend on Atlanta. You're like, okay, this is one of your first episodes, and you're saying, okay, we're going to give basically a full episode to a character who's been a supporting character so far.
Right.
And I just loved what they did in making that character from, you know, just one of the daughters into instantly a great character immediately.
Yeah. Really great stuff. And I, you know, I'm a huge fan of Pamela Adlon, and the last episode was when she was working on the series and the kid who was playing her son, said that she was hot, and that continued. That was like a line that continued throughout the show, and that was a great one too. I love I really love the stuff that they do, the showbiz stuff that they do on there. I mean, the relationships with her daughters and her trying to live her life, all that stuff is fantastic. But there's just something really extra funny about the showbiz stuff they do.
I like that because when they do those bits, and they tend not to overstay on any of it, but you watch those and you go, okay, there's a brilliant straight-up Hollywood satire that Pamela Adlon could be writing and producing and starring in, and And that's just not what she wants to do.
Yeah.
Because you know that she figures, okay, I did Californication, and some people liked Californication. I never really did. But, you know, she knows that she did the kind of L.A. satire show. And so she lets these little glimpses slide in so that you appreciate and maybe kind of wish that the whole show was that. But then you see a great moment with one of the daughters, and you go, oh, okay, this is really what the show is.
Right.
So I like the way that she's balancing those two things.
Yeah. I think they're, you know, the two best comedies on TV are on FX. I mean, and I think Atlanta's the best show, whatever genre, that's on TV. So great stuff from FX. Really great stuff. And how is the season of You're the Worst going?
It's going fairly well. I think last season was perhaps a little bit better because it had a slightly stronger through line with Gretchen's depression, and it gave Aya Cash great stuff to do. I think this season has been a little bit more spread out in the sense that it's tried to give all of the core characters things to do, and that makes it a little bit more diffuse. It's good. It's funny. It's smart. It's clever. It's tart. It's bitter. It's sad. It's also, interestingly, being somewhat overshadowed by a couple shows within its own family.
Yeah.
So who knew?
Yeah. Okay. Tonight, a big event, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Let's do the Time Warp again. Now, you've seen it, Dan.
I have indeed.
And I know a lot of my friends are very excited and have the VCR or the DVD warmed up. DVR, well, I'll get one of the letters right. The DVR warmed up because obviously everybody's going to be watching the Cubs tonight. But you've seen it. How is it?
I would tell people to get their expectations very tempered. Honestly, I think that a lot of people are going to just love this regardless because
yes.
the cult of devotion around the property is such that people are going to go with it regardless. And then there will also be some people who will be probably angry and annoyed with it because it's not the Tim Curry movie, et cetera. I was pretty disappointed by it. I felt like there was nothing all that necessary about it. I thought it was a little bit lifeless and poorly staged. I thought it had no real particular reason for being. I think that it's 2016, and that if you're going to do a new Rocky Horror Picture Show, you have to be able to tell me how it's existing in 2016, how it is, what the weirdnesses that were weird in 1975, what's weird in 2016? What is comparable? What is similarly outlandish? And there's really no sense of that at all. And so either you're going to be amused to see some of the performances and to see a couple people popping up and you know, just be happy that Tim Curry's in it as the narrator and just be pleased that he's okay enough to do that, and perhaps a little bit sad because he's in diminished capacity physically after the stroke he had a few years ago, but he's sharp in other ways. But I didn't think it was very good. I think that the movie is not a great movie, but the movie has great things about it. And whatever you want to say about the movie, it's a movie that's alive, especially in the moments where Tim Curry is holding court. And I really felt like this was kind of mummified and embalmed, unfortunately.
That's too bad. Kenny Ortega was behind it.
He is indeed. He directed and he co-choreographed. Choreographed.
Yeah.
Is the word I was looking for there.
Yeah.
Easy for me to say. And yeah, I don't think it's well directed at all, honestly. I think that it doesn't accentuate the performances by any of the actors. I don't think it captures the choreography very well. And I think the choreography is better in the original. In the original movie, there's a lot of kind of half orchestrated chaos. There's a lot of, okay, everybody do crazy stuff and we'll catch it as best we can, and we'll just try to catch the energy of it. And this feels more regimented, but it also just, it doesn't have the spark. It doesn't have the energy. And I was really pretty disappointed.
Yeah.
There was nothing that I felt made this necessary, unfortunately. But a lot of people are just going to be happy because, you know, there's a whole generation of people for whom a movie made in 1975 is ancient.
Yes.
And it's just like from another world. And some people will be happy. Ooh, look, it's Victoria Justice. I like her from Nickelodeon or Disney or whatever factory she came out of. And some people will just be happy with the updating on all of it. And I guess that's fine. I just don't think it's very good, unfortunately.
Okay. That's too bad. Now let's go over to HBO here and talk about their Sunday night the Sunday night lineup. How do you feel about what's going on Sunday nights?
I like a lot of it. I don't know that I like certain parts of it as much as some people do. How much of Westworld have you watched?
I'm sorry? How much of Westworld? About two episodes.
Okay, and what are your thoughts on it?
I think it's good, not great. I know a lot of people are kind of losing their mind over it. I found the first episode to be relatively confusing. It started to settle down a little bit, but the everything about it in terms of production is really impressive, and I really like the performances a lot. I'm just a little confused as to the tone and to what they're really trying to say with the entire thing.
I think I'm probably closer to you on that than to a lot of the people who are indeed over the moon. I have many colleagues who love it and are gushing effusively about it each Sunday, and I think without any question, it looks spectacular.
Yeah.
The effects are tremendous. For a TV show, a lot of the stuff they're doing, and starting even with the opening credit sequence, the gorgeous opening credit sequence.
Yep.
One of those that I suspect I will keep watching for at least a while. I won't start fast forwarding through that opening credit sequence for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The performances I think are mostly really good, but a lot of them I don't know. There are just so many people in the show, and there's so little, honestly, focus to so much of it that I think a lot of the performances are really good, but I don't know how many of them I would want to commit to calling great other than Evan Rachel Wood. I think she's great.
Yeah.
But otherwise, who have you seen enough of to want to sign on entirely for? I don't know on that one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm one behind on it, obviously. But I'm not in any hurry to kind of catch up on it. And a lot of people that I know, majority of people that I know or that I have talked to, whether it's in person or in the internet or whatever, love it, like unconditionally, as you said. I mean, people really love it. How's it doing? Are people watching it?
It's doing fairly well. It's not it's not Game of Thrones, but nothing's Game of Thrones. But it's definitely, it had a solid premiere and it has held up for 2 weeks, which is the most important thing for HBO at this point, is the people did not get alienated or tune it out. So I think it is doing well enough. It's a ridiculously expensive show, but which I think will inspire HBO to keep it around for at least a while to sort of spread out the cost.
Right.
And I have colleagues who are very engaged with it and who are trying to solve mysteries and riddles and find answers to things. And I find that, personally speaking, to be something I can't figure out because I don't even know what I'm supposed to be wanting answers to.
That's exactly how I feel. That's exactly how I feel, Dan. Yeah.
And so people are solving these riddles, and I'm looking at headlines to things, and I'm going, okay, I didn't know I was supposed to be wondering that, but okay, if you say I am, that's fine. Apparently, I'm not wondering in any way where I'm like hungry to wonder about it, but I'm curious. I'm going along with it. I set my season pass on my DVR. I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to watch it on my TV in HD as opposed to on the HBO streaming site because it's a really pretty show.
Yeah.
It looks so good. But I don't know what I want out of it, and maybe that'll make it harder for me to be disappointed than some people. I wonder if the people who are out there trying to make big predictions are going to end up being disappointed, and maybe the people who are just kind of watching it and going along with it, maybe it'll be easier to deal with wherever it goes.
Hmm. Now, I believe I'm in the minority on this, but I happen to love Divorce. I've been through two of those, but not in real life. But the show Divorce, I happen to really, really like it. Where do you stand on it?
I am positive on it as well, but I also completely and totally understand why people don't like it.
Yeah.
Or why the people who don't like it don't like it. I think that it is very tonally specific, and it is a show that does not give a darn if you hate every character.
Yep.
And I understand completely why for a lot of viewers that would turn people off. It doesn't bother me in the slightest that I'm not supposed to like Sarah Jessica Parker's character because honestly, I never liked Sex and the City, and so I don't have this need to feel any affection whatsoever towards her. And I know a lot of people didn't like Carrie on Sex and the City, so it goes both ways. But I find the tone to be sort of wonderfully sarcastic and droll and embittered, and I can get along with that.
Yeah, so. That's exactly why I like it. And I, too, I hated Sex and the City. I was never a big fan of Sarah Jessica Parker in that, and for some reason I love the fact that she's playing a completely unlikable. Well, everybody in the show, I think, is relatively unlikable. And I, you know, I didn't know much about the show. I had seen just a quick preview of it, and I had no idea Molly Shannon was in it. I'm the hugest Molly Shannon fan in the world, and she's so great. I mean, from the opening episode where she, you know, just drunk, pulling out a gun, shoots it at Tracy Letts, I was just like beside myself. And that's how they kick off the show. I don't know. I'm a real big fan. Who's behind Divorce?
Sharon Corgan, who also co-created Catastrophe, which I'm pretty sure I've probably mentioned a couple times over the months, which is a great Hulu show that has two seasons available on Hulu, and people should definitely watch that. And I think that if you watch that, you will see a lot of Sharon Corgan's sense of humor in this.
Right.
And that's why I like it, I think. I think I like it because I can feel her voice coming through. And I think that it's a good performance that Sarah Jessica Parker's giving.
Oh, yeah.
And she doesn't care if you like her.
No, yeah. No, she's great. She's great. So is Thomas Hayden Church. Everybody in it is really, really great. And the kids are good. I just think it's, I don't know. It just, you know, it's like right after the first episode, I'm like, well, that show spoke to me. You know, I'm like, so anyway. And that's
on. I totally think it's a wavelength thing, though. I mean, if you feel like you want somebody who isn't kind of faithful, who you can latch onto as a flesh and bone, flesh and blood, I'm going to empathize with this person character, for a lot of people it's going to be difficult. And, you know, lots of people don't like spending 30 straight minutes with people they hate. And
right.
I don't blame them for that. You don't like doing it in real life. Why would you want to do it on a Sunday night?
Yeah. And that's a completely legitimate complaint, but I love it. So that's Divorce on HBO with Sarah Jessica Parker, Thomas Hayden Church, Molly Shannon, Tracy Letts. Okay, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is here. We got more TV to talk about. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Prince, F-I-E-N, and you can read him at The Hollywood Reporter. Lots more TV to talk about right after we take this break on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude here till 5 a.m. And my guest right now is Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Prince, F-I-E-N. And we got more TV to talk about. Welcome back, Dan.
So much TV to talk about.
Yes. Is there anything particular that you would like to lead with?
No, I definitely think we want to make sure we get to Insecure because it is the other part of the HBO Sunday lineup, and I think it's a really good show as well. I think that Issa Rae's comedy, that her voice is a voice that is not on TV so much, and the show is doing different things and saying different things in different ways. And it's not just that she's African-American. It's not just that she's a woman. It's not just that she's coming out of a different neighborhood in Los Angeles than all the other Los Angeles comedy shows that are out there. It's just a different perspective. And I think that's a special thing as well. I think it's kind of funny how little connection those three HBO shows have as a through line at this point.
Absolutely. But, yeah, that's absolutely true. Yep.
But what can you do? What do you think of Insecure?
I like it very much. And I think, you know, I never knew who she was before. Where would I know her from?
YouTube. She's had a show or has had a show that has been extremely successful on YouTube for a long time. And that is what her background is. And this is a show that she's been trying to get onto HBO for a long time. I think it was originally ordered in 2013. And the show was co-created with Larry Wilmore, but of course Larry Wilmore's been off doing other things for years at this point.
Yeah.
So he was involved at the beginning, went off and did other things. Maybe he'll come back for a second season. Who knows? But yeah, no, she's just someone who HBO has been trying to finesse a vehicle around for a while, and this is a good vehicle. And there really are so many of these current comedies, and Atlanta's one, Better Things is one, this is one, that are coming from just a different voice. And it's good that the voices are actor-writer voices, and so that helps with the authenticity of the projects. But there are a lot of very singular comedies on the air at this moment, and it's one of them as well.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the Sunday night lineup. Okay, I'm very interested in Graves. I happen to be a really huge Nick Nolte fan, and I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
I thought it was pretty dismal, the three episodes I've seen.
Oh, okay.
It's the story of an ex-president, a two-term Republican president, 25 years after his administration, beginning to have second thoughts about his life as a politician. And it just doesn't feel, basically it feels like a network that had never done a scripted show before putting on a scripted show and not knowing how to do it. And then that's, which is exactly what it is.
Yes.
It's on FX, and you know, you may or may not know where to find FX on your TV dial. I'm not sure I do at this point. And it really does feel like the kind of show where if a network had a strong comedy development hand, like if it were an HBO or an FX or a Showtime even, that it could have been steered and finessed in a direction where, for example, all the actors were on the same comedic page, but some of the actors feel like they're in broad sitcoms. Nick Nolte, you know, he can be funny, but with that voice of his, you're constantly being distracted by the pain it sounds like he's in, basically. And that makes it a hard thing to do to laugh, you know?
Yeah.
His voice is this pain, the thing that comes from deep in his soul. And,
right.
And it's not really a comedy voice, and yet Nick Nolte has been very funny in his career.
Yes.
He is a man capable of humor, so you know that he has this in him as an actor. You just have to find a way to get beyond
being reminded of Affliction when you're
and that's what his voice is at this point. His voice is Affliction, and he's you know, he's made good use of it. So
yeah.
A show like HBO's Luck, you know, he was phenomenal.
Oh yeah, he was amazing on that show. Yeah,
and the voice added to it.
Yeah.
You know, Fox's take on Broadchurch that they did that no one watched, Grace Point, he was amazing in it, and no one watched or gave him any credit for it. But he was great, and basically he's great with people who have this torment in their soul, because that's what his voice speaks to. And this is a character who has torment, but he's also being surrounded by very sitcom-y people trying to be funny, and it's a bad jumble of tones.
All right. All right, so that's Graves on Epix, not good. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We got a break for the news, and then after the news, we'll come back and we'll talk more TV. I want to kick off the segment after the news with us assessing what's happening on SNL this season thus far. All right, we'll take a quick break for the news. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN. All right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm Nick DiGilio, your overnight dude, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning right here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell, and Steve Cochran at 6. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. So get your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about popular candy state by state, one of our many Halloween topics for the month. And we got another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? All that is coming up right here. But let's get back to the conversation with Dan Feinberg. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. So let's welcome Dan back to the show. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
All right. SNL. It's always interesting to follow SNL. I mean, well, I watch it every week. I've been watching it since October of 1975, every Saturday. So I'm a hardcore fan. But everybody has their eyes on it during an election year. And thus far, the three episodes that we've had, first of all, before we go into like the entire episodes, how do you feel about how they're handling the election and the debates and stuff?
I feel like they've been doing an okay job, and I don't know if they could do better than that. Like, I think they're probably doing just about as well as they could do. Bringing in Alec Baldwin has been a reasonably good idea. He has at least made a perspective on Donald Trump. And that was a thing that they didn't have at all last year, whether it was Daryl Hammond or whoever was doing it the year before.
Taron Killam was doing them too.
That's right. And then, of course, there was that clown who did it for that one episode where the guy who looked a lot like Donald Trump hosted.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I'm saying is, at least Alec Baldwin has a take.
Yes.
And I like that because, you know, the late night guys don't either. So you've got Jimmy Fallon with his totally toothless impression and all of that. So I like that. But I do think that they lost a lot of credibility when they had Trump host last year. Mm-hmm. And they can make jokes about it as much as they want, but it was something they did, and it was something they did only for the ratings, and they can make no justification other than we hoard ourselves out for this thing.
Yeah.
And we were part of this thing. And so now, a year later, they're trying to make fun of it, and they can all they can do, for me at least, is the best they can. They can make the best of a situation that they made bad. And so I've kind of reached the point, honestly, where I'm just ready for it to be mid-November so that I can laugh at certain things again.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes SNL has made me laugh with the political stuff, but a lot of times it has been just too close to the bone.
Well, that's the thing about it. I happen to think that I think Baldwin's great, and I think Kate McKinnon is great. I think the writing is not very great. And one of the reasons why I think the writing is they're struggling is because this is such an insane election. Do you know what I mean? Like they could just take an actual transcript from the debate.
They essentially have the past 2 weeks.
It's amazing.
Also, they do have a problem, and they would never admit it, but they do have a problem with the fact that at this point, every joke they make has been made previously and as effectively or more effectively by Samantha Bee, by Seth Meyers, by Trevor Noah, who I still don't think gets enough credit, by so many different people covering the same terrain, and they're just coming in a few days later and making the same jokes, and they may have, you know, Alec Baldwin, and that's obviously going to look good for them, and that obviously helps, but it's a lot of the same jokes, and it's a lot of the same material that everybody has been going through in the exact same ways, and it's a struggle for them because they used to be the only show in town,
They
used to certainly be the show that people look to. And this, you know, I feel like in past elections there have been primetime specials and all of that, and there hasn't been any of that this year.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel in general about the show? We've had three episodes so far. I thought the strongest of the three was the first episode with Margot Robbie of the three. I thought this past episode with Emily Blunt was weak. There were certain things in there that made me laugh. I'm not a fan of the two new guys. I like Melissa Villaseñor a lot, and I think she's going to be capable of doing some amazing stuff because I've seen her work before. But these other two guys, I never liked Mikey Day. In fact, I disliked Mikey Day big time on the Maya and Marty thing, and I can't believe they promote. I know he's been a writer on the show for a while, but they promoted him. He's in, like, every scene.
It is very surprising how much they've given the two new guys to do this early. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Taron Killam was their go-to kind of straight man, their go-to white leading man in the scene. And basically, they need to find out if Mikey Day is the new one, if the other new guy is the new one. So they're doing a lot of things with both of them. And I think probably a lot of people who have taken a long time to break in on SNL have to be looking at the amount of time those two have gotten and been astounded.
Like
Pete Davidson is still struggling to get that much screen time. And I think he's both brilliant, but you can also see his limitations every single time he's on screen. It's weird to see. Like, for example, he can't move, and they can't do anything with him because the thing he's best at is sitting at a table being weird and funny.
Right.
But when they ask him to move, he can't.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because he needs to see the cue cards or because he's physically awkward or whatever, but it's a limitation.
You're absolutely right. And the one sketch just from last week, he didn't move at all. He was working a drive-through at a Burger King and just did all his lines just leaning on a windowsill.
which is what he can do.
Right.
And I think that's too bad because I think they think he's incredibly funny as a comedic perspective. And I think I agree with that, but I just see every time he's on screen, I go, okay, wow, they would like him to do more and he can't.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting to see those two get as much screen time as they have. I think they've been okay. And I think that, honestly, for me, the first three episodes have been SNL-y episodes. They've been full of things that I have found funny, full of things I haven't found funny. Like last week, the 1255 sketch, the Who's Afraid of...
the hamster... Who's Afraid of Virginia? Well, I thought in concept it was great. In concept it was great, and there were moments in it that I really liked.
I like that they played it very close to just entirely straight. Like, I thought just Beck Bennett doing kind of a Richard Burton impression, to me, was tremendous.
Yeah, no,
and I wasn't laughing. I was going, wow, this is experimental and weird.
Well, that's a 1250, that's the kind of stuff they put there. Yeah, exactly right. I actually thought that the Burger King sketch would have been also a good 1250 sketch.
I think the difference is if that had been the 1255 sketch, I would have fast-forwarded through to the end, but I would have been done. Because that sketch, I was just going, oh, my God, is this one of the product integration things that they were talking about doing for this year? And they claim it wasn't. They claim that it was not product integration at all, which I find bizarre.
It is a little strange. I mean, they specifically mentioned about four different items from the Burger King menu.
it was weird, and I'm not sure I found it funny. But, yeah, there's been a lot of stuff where I've thought that bits and pieces were funny of an episode. I didn't feel like they got nearly enough use out of Lin-Manuel Miranda, but I thought that his opening monologue was great.
It was so great.
That's the moment. Mm-hmm. You're taking bits and pieces, and no, I don't think, for me, none of the three episodes has been consistently funny, but it's SNL, so when was the last time you got, like, three consistently funny episodes of SNL in a row?
I don't think ever.
Exactly. So like, we have the rose-colored glasses of the 1977-78 season, or whenever we have our rose-colored glasses for, but I think the show is... while probably less funny than when it had your Bill Murray's or your Eddie Murphy's or your Dan Aykroyd's on, I think that it's still in moments funny and in moments entirely unfunny. And that's
to me, that's the nature of the game. That's the show.
Exactly.
And I've been watching it for, 40 some years now, so I'm not going to stop now.
And I haven't been watching it for as many, but I've certainly been watching it for 20 something and will continue to.
Okay. You surprised by the full season pickups on CBS?
I'm not. I think that the shows, while not being very good, and you're talking about full season orders for Kevin Can Wait, Bull, and MacGyver, all three shows, I would say, are not very good. I gave each one of the shows multiple episodes and abandoned each one of the shows, so I'm done with all of those, and CBS has three more shows premiering next week, and none of them are very good, so... This was not a very good development year for CBS, and I think CBS knows that, and I think CBS knows that a lot of these shows really are just intended to be kind of mainstream, easy-drinking shows, and that's what Kevin Can Wait is, that's what Man with a Plan with Matt LeBlanc is, MacGyver is certainly nothing more than that, and I think they think that a lot of CBS's shows repeat better than other network shows, et cetera. And so you're going to give them a chance to find audiences. I don't know that any of the shows is a clear enough hit that CBS can feel comfortable imagining that they'll be on the schedule next year. Mm-hmm. But, for now, repeats don't do well on any networks, even CBS. And so you just want to make sure you have inventory.
Okay.
Basically.
I got it. Okay, now before we let you go, I want to end on a high note and talk very quickly about how great The Good Place is.
Barry would be the answer to that.
Yes. It's so good. And I don't know. I like it. I think it gets better every week. And, I love the fact that it was pretty much from the beginning a really great ensemble show. I mean, obviously Kristen Bell and Ted Danson have great stuff to do, but so does everybody in the show. And I love that.
And they didn't in the first couple episodes.
Right.
And I think that's why I agree with you in terms of the week-to-week progression. Because it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to do a show around Kristen Bell and Ted Danson because, for heaven's sakes, everyone knows that those two are TV stars. But a lot of the supporting cast is less well-known, and the show has taken great leaps and bounds to make those supporting characters feel more and more a part of the show with Kristen Bell and Ted Danson. And I appreciate that because it would have been perfectly easy on a weekly basis to have Ted Danson and Kristen Bell singing karaoke together and doing other wacky things and just making that the entire thing. And so last week's episode did have that happening, and it was very funny.
Yep.
But there were other things happening with other characters that had nothing to do with those two, and the show didn't fall apart without them. I think that's a big step.
Yeah, and I think the writing is great. And again, it's a show that really is about something. There are a lot of laughs there, but it's a pretty rich show, and there's a lot going on. I really love that show. I really do.
I think it's a good show, and then I think it pairs well with Superstore, which is perhaps a little bit more erratic, but still has a great cast and some great moments.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, listen, we'll get back on track now, and we'll get you back in a couple of weeks. Okay, Dan?
Excellent, because I'm sure there'll be plenty more TV to talk about.
Absolutely. And we can follow Dan on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-E-I-N, and you can read him at The Hollywood Reporter. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, Dan.
Talk to you soon, Nick.
Okay, take care. There you go. Dan Feinberg. Always great to talk TV with Dan Feinberg. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what candy is most popular in each state so we can prepare you for Halloween, which is coming up. All right.